are willing to do whatever or to suffer whatever from Guatemala to the border of Mexican U.S. because there is no way to live in Guatemala economically, politically, culturally. So all those who are in trouble. I mean, a big problem for a community, indigenous people community.
Would you like to do a greeting to your people and to all of us in the Bay Area?
In Cachiquel, or
yes,
okay. Janila Matioshiwe, Wachalal, Tromashish Nikashach, Chupanihun Ramahre, Yen Impatenachila, Pitin and Patinamit, Chimaltenango, Kuchiyo Chonkachikel, Irachalahi Chonkiche, Kachalahi Chonkanhoval, Kachalahi Chon Mam, Tibana Utsil, Kochsamahunan, Kichinkirini Kahal Ruach, Richkerik Kakaslema Wepa, Estados Unidos, Ichuhari Kakaslenchila, Guatemala. I just said, my people who speaks Mam Kakchikel, another language, let's come together and we can do something to change the situation here in the U.S. and also to help our people in our country.
That does it for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Kevin Pina and Miguel Gavilan Molina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 11:01, and coming up on a Radio Geekly, it's an audio potluck of all things geek. And this can only happen with the support of the members of the KBOO Foundation. Yes, those passive listeners who are not yet active members of the KBOO Foundation can go right now to remedy that oversight at kboo.fm. You click on the little maroon triangle filled in with the little yellow letters that spell out the word donate. Stay tuned now for these important community announcements followed by a Radio Geekly.
KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
When you put all things geek into a podcast, the result is a Radio Geekly. This monthly podcast is made by geeks of all kinds discussing things of all kinds. They cover a multitude of interesting topics involving comics, games, and TV shows. KBOO is a community that hosts many different kinds of public affairs and music shows on our air, and a Radio Geekly fits right into our discussion of the many aspects of our culture, but we need the help of our listeners to keep KBOO on the air. For the next 2 days, every donation of $20 earns an entry into our community-based raffle, the Ultimate KBOO Neighborhood Experience. In this package are several different gift cards to shops in our beloved neighborhood, along with a night's stay and a meal. So if you're interested in enjoying the KBOO neighborhood, visit kboo.fm/give and donate to enter. See full rules and details at kboo.fm/2019raffle.
That's right, and you can do that right now. In the meantime, I am honored, privileged, as well as contractually obligated to remind you that KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Portland Underground Graduate School, a local independent learning community offering courses and workshops for continuing lifelong learning. Scholarships and other tuition opportunities available. Course options and more information online at pugspdx.com. And now, as promised, this is a Radio Geekly.
This is Merrick Monroe, and you're listening to a Radio Geekly. Hey folks, thanks so much for tuning in to another exciting episode of A Radio Geekly. We have lots to share with you all today, so let's get started. This is Godiva Lee with KBOO Portland. Get Trekked.
I'm John Irvin.
I'm Chris Trump.
I'm Lou Torres with Vancouver Star Trek Happy Hour.
All right! Cheers, everybody. Yay! Any excuse for me to get drunk? Turn on the radio. All right, explain what Star Trek Happy Hour is.
It's a monthly happy hour, and we do it typically, it's every month, but 2 months in a row, usually in Vancouver, and then the third month we'll find a spot in Portland. Try to find a different bar each month, and we're not all in costume. If you walked into a bar that we were at, you really wouldn't be able to tell right away that we were a bunch of Trekkies.
if you tried to chat one of us up, and then we were just like, have you seen Star Trek? I love Star Trek.
Just
you
listen watch Star to the conversation, you probably get it pretty quick, but... Just walking in, everyone's in, you know, your normal clothes. And just a bunch of people.
My normal clothes are Star Trek.
Fair enough.
For the Star Trek bar crawl, which was the first one that I went to, everybody dressed up for that. That was the first thing I ever went to. I think that's how I got into it.
Where we met you. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is part of Northwest Star Trek Week, so which is an offshoot. Vancouver Star Trek Happy Hour started a little over a year ago. Basically, I used to go to Star Trek Las Vegas a lot. As great as all those panels are and seeing all the guests and everything, my favorite part was at the end of the night, going to the Masquerade Bar.
Yes!
And it's packed with all these people dressed like Klingons and Orion slave girls and slave boys. And
did you ever do the bar hop looking for celebrities where you would go to Ibar and then back to Masquerade and
back to Ibar? Oh, yeah.
Did you see Casey's over there?
There he is. They're on the elevator. Go!
All right, so Lisa, what my first Star Trek happy hour was. Yeah, how'd you get into it?
I actually don't remember which one was my first Star Trek happy hour.
I didn't drink that much.
That was a successful one. No, so I'd been to Star Trek Las Vegas a few times, and as I was on the unofficial Facebook page, I'm just browsing through it in my feed, and I see, oh, hey, I'm doing this Star Trek happy hour. I'm like, oh, that's a cool idea. And then I see it's in Vancouver, Washington. I'm like, really? Like this international page, and somebody posted something, and it's not even Portland. It's Vancouver. Like, that's where I live.
That's what got me hooked, too, because I was living in Vancouver at the time. Something's happening out here.
Super excited that something actually applied to me. Joined the group and showed up. Been to the Star Trek Las Vegas, but I never got to experience the Masquerade Bar in the way that Lou did, and so this was my way of having that socialization, especially as the convention becomes cost prohibitive, to be able to do that at home and regularly and to build those bonds. It's just been a really fantastic experience. Mm-hmm.
What about you, John?
You made me go to one about a month ago. That was the first one I ever went to.
November was your first one.
That's right, November. I really like it. There's people there that like Star Trek.
Yeah.
We were talking about that right before the show. A lot of times now when you go, for people who are new, for some they go, yeah, if you're into Star Trek, you have an opportunity to start a discussion with a bunch of people you don't know. You know, really, the last few happy hours, I'm not really talking much about episodes too much. I mean, that conversation's going on around me, because you know so many people, that's been just over a year now, that you're catching up on what people are doing, you know. You're actually becoming friends.
In the last show, that's pretty much how I know all of my friends, is through some Star Trek-related thing. And, like, it's not like we just sit around and obsess about Star Trek, but that's just how we met.
True with me. Pretty much all of my life is because of people I've met in
Star Trek. That's how we started hanging out. Yeah,
that's right.
We were at Pop Tavern, and Tim was like, hey, you like Star Trek? This dude likes Star Trek. Well, hello, other fellow that likes Star Trek. But who's your captain?
Janeway. My captain.
Janeway.
Picard.
I got
no hair.
You can relate. That's sweet.
Picard because he's a manager.
There you go.
I like that.
I was Sisko because of daddy issues.
Nobody said Kirk?
Oh my God. Everyone
blasphemy.
I think seriously. We need to walk in pairs to our cars when we leave.
There's angry Trekkies staring at us through the windows like, how dare you?
How dare you?
Yeah, he's okay.
He was my captain for a really long time, but I only ever watched the original series.
I'll
for like
say this:
10 years, and then
I'll rank him above Lorca.
Yep. Well, I mean,
well, Lorca. Which Lorca?
Mirror Universe Lorca.
Yeah. The evil Lorca, or the one we haven't met yet?
Hey. Right. So, how did you get into Star Trek, Lou?
Growing up, I mean, I've always been a big reader, mysteries, whodunits, and all that, and novels, and history, and science fiction. I've always liked Star Trek. And Star Wars, and Battlestar Galactica, and Space 1999, and all of it. But I really wouldn't have ever called myself a Trekkie, which is odd because I run Happy Hour, Star Trek Happy Hour group now, and I have all these Star Trek costumes in my closet, and I go to Star Trek conventions, and I don't do that for anything else. But what happened is a few years ago, now, for those listeners who don't know, I'm gay. Now,
anyway, as you're saying.
Oh yeah, yeah. So when I was single, I had a ton of friends, and we were always going out all the time. If you've ever been out to a gay bar, there's an argument to be made that gay bars are generally singles bars.
Yes.
Right. Hmm. Okay. So, and not that everyone there is single or looking, but it's definitely if you're gay and you are looking, you would go to a gay bar. That's an easiest opportunity for you to meet someone else.
In most cities,
so it's
this
right.
is true.
All my friends, you know, we were all just, that was our social scene. We were going out to gay bars all the time. So I got into a relationship. Suddenly, I was like, I don't know, I just don't really want to, I'd love to hang out more with my friends, but not every Friday and Saturday night in a gay bar, because I wasn't really into it anymore. I ended up being more of a home buddy, and my other half was like, you know, you've had such a big social life. Now, like, we're just hanging around. I was on Facebook. Someone was starting a Star Trek club, so he was starting one in Phoenix. So he's like, hey, do you want to be in my? I had never met him before, but he's like, do you want to be in? It's a Phoenix. I was living in Phoenix, Arizona at the time. Do you want to be in this ship? And I go, sure, why not? He goes, great, let's go and meet. And so I went over, and it was just me and him. And we went to and the first, like, our little away mission, as they called it, was to a Doctor Who festival.
So
it's like
cool.
So we're like hanging around, and he's like actually in a full costume, and I had a TOS uniform. I had nothing. I had like a t-shirt and jeans. I'm like, I felt like an idiot. I felt like it wasn't an idiot because people were saying, oh, you're a Trekkie. I'm like, it's because I didn't know much about any of the episodes, and also I'm like, I don't have the clothes. And I mentioned before I'm gay, right?
So I think so, yeah.
I was like, I need some outfits. So I started buying like the shirts and the, you know, the pants, the jacket, the, you know, TOS. I'm like, oh, now I need an Enterprise. And going to conventions, I was meeting more and more people because they knew the stuff. I started watching it again. As I started rewatching it, as much as I love all science fiction, Star Trek, I realized how positive it was. That there's all this dystopian stuff and science fiction stuff, and that's entertaining and great and interesting, but that I would rewatch Star Trek over and over again because it made me feel good. The idea that, especially when things are troubled, for instance, our current political situation, that we can be better. Like, celebrate diversity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can all work together. We can overcome all these petty little differences that we have. And that we will get out there into the stars. And I love that idea. And then the costumes, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So. What about you? The reason I kind of got into Star Trek is Sue formed a Star Trek club in my junior high school. And I started going there, having a good time. Because I liked Star Trek before then, but I wasn't part of the Star Trek universe so much. She did that, and then I expanded and made it a citywide club. And I've been going to conventions and meeting people and having fun ever since.
Chris!
Well, I got into Star Trek. Next Generation came out when I was about 6 years old. And
yeah, she's young.
My, you know, after I got past the I want to be a paleontologist phase, you know, I wanted to be an astronaut, and so much so I actually went to space camp. But and so Star Trek was, you know, my parents let me watch it when it first came out, and I didn't see all the episodes because I'm freaking 6 years old. So I had to catch a lot of them in syndication, but it's always kind of been a part of my life growing up. Particularly, you know, I'm growing up, and you know, all of the other kids in school, like, they know, you know, baseball and football and sports, and like, I didn't even know that you could sink a basket and get 3 points. Like, that was just weird to me. Like, you should get 1 point. Like, none of that made sense to me. I knew nothing about sports. Here's this show that's in space and exploring, and also, I don't have good eyesight. I've got glasses, and that was something I was self-conscious about. And here you've got this Geordi LaForge, he's the engineer and he's saving the ship, and he does that little roll underneath the door as it's closing down, which looked a lot cooler when you're 6 years old than when it does now in reruns. But it,
did you
it
try
was
to practice part... it to try to do it?
Oh, you know I did. You know it. And I had the little metal die-cast Enterprise with that with the saucer separation, and I played with that as a kid, flying around the house. And every room in my house was a different sector I was exploring. But
did you steal the barrettes to try and make the visors?
Oh, I'm sure I did. I'm sure I did something.
I
like
had
that.
To say, when you were saying about the rolling, I could totally imagine you doing that and then standing up in like a Christmas Story with your glasses broken and being like, my mom's gonna kill me.
I remember we had a two-story house, and so like I'd get in the stairs and I'd like get on the bottom of the stairs and I'd turn like you would in an elevator, and I'd make the little sound, and then I'd walk up the stairs at the top like the stairs were the turbo lift in my house. And so I've always grown up with it. And then later on, you know, I got into Battlestar Galactica, caught up on the 1980 BSG and all the other sci-fis. But Star Trek itself really shaped me, and I'm still learning to this day how much of an impact that had on me. As you get into the more the current political climate, where you're talking about gay rights and trans rights and all those things, and the transphobia, and I think to myself, why do I so easily adapt? There's a meme I'm sure many of us have seen where the Klingon, I don't remember if it's Kor, he's like, "Oh, Curzon, my friend," and Jadzia says, "I'm Jadzia now," and he says, "Jadzia, my friend."
But it's that easy.
Yeah, like, why is it that so easy for me? And I really actually attest that to Star Trek, where you had a different alien of the week every week. I just think that it really speaks, you know, anybody who grew up with the original series talks about, you know, we had difficult times and it gave us hope. And I look back on the Next Generation growing up with that, and I see how that taught me diversity, mm-hmm. In a way that I don't think I would have gotten any other way.
That was one of the best little group of episodes of Deep Space Nine. That battle. Wow, yeah. That was
they,
great.
Well, I think it worked out so well for him. I'm mostly Deep Space Nine. Obviously, my captain is Sisko. Voyager was the flagship of UPN. Like,
It launched it.
And it was the only show that was doing good on it, besides like a few like cult classics here and there.
For those for the younger in the audience, UPN is a defunct network. Well, it's not the CW.
And for the even younger fans, a network is a channel on the cable TV.
There was UPN
and
the network.
Well, actually, for the younger, TV.
There was UPN and the WB, and they merged to join the CW.
Okay, there you go.
Voyager was like the one that every, like, the producers and the showrunners cared about. And so, and this is, it's that game Telephone that you hear it at a convention from Ira, and then you retell it, and somebody else retells it. But from what I remember him saying at the con is Deep Space Nine's third season, they put all of their focus into Voyager, the new show, to launch this new network. And then they kind of didn't pay as much attention to Deep Space Nine. So they had the shticky Star Trek episodes for those seasons. And then they were figuring out how they wanted it to grow. And it kind of formed into like, and then you've got the characters, and then you've got this epic battle adventure that they're like, this is it. This is the direction we want to go in.
Which was the greatest story arc in all of Star Trek. Because it was actually a story arc. They finally had
the freedom to copy Babylon 5 the way they wanted to.
You are the third person to say this on my podcast. Get out of my house. Get out of my house.
Oh my God. You liar. You listened to her podcast and researched before you got here.
She did.
That seems stupid.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, no, I agree. As the less the producers get into the show, the better the show's got. Too many cooks in the kitchen just freaking back off, give them money, and let the writers do what they do, like what you hired them for. But when I watched the Orville, I think this is what TOS was in the 60s. You've got cheesy special effects. You've got in-your-face, blatant, hit-you-over-the-head morals. But it's taught and it's shown in a good way. It's done well. You get what they're doing. And it's just told well.
It is.
Yeah.
It's obvious what they're doing, but they tell it well.
Right.
And they're not afraid to go after the...
In bright primary colors.
Yes. Exactly. And I wish Star Trek had done that.
You know what it always reminds me of, the Orville, is do you guys watch that show Robot Chicken?
Oh, yeah.
you know that Robot one Chicken. Skit... where it's like the morning crew, Picard and Worf, and everybody is like, "Oh, we're done. We pulled our ship."
Yeah, and then they scuttle out. He's
like, "All right, I can't remember his name." Is like, "All right, Captain Chad, thanks for taking the night shift." And like Captain Chad comes on, and he's got like a popped collar, night crew. We should talk about what direction is the Star Trek Happy Hour going in?
North.
I haven't done my homework.
That's all good. It's a labor of love.
It is a labor of love. No, so Northwest Star Trek Week. So November was our 1 year anniversary. That's November 2018. So we're already...
We're heading into season two, in about two more years, we'll actually get good.
A lot of surprises with Vancouver Star Trek Happy Hour itself. It's okay. So, by the way, we're on meetup.com and on Facebook. And Facebook is kind of where most of the new members are joining and where most of the information sharing is going on. But if you are anti-Facebook or you're not on Facebook, meetup.com, you can go there. We are on there also. Okay, so every month I've been picking a place to have a happy hour, and I try to theme it. Hold on a second. Chris has something.
If you happen to be a bar owner listening to this, just opportunity, just throw it out.
Please.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, please, give me freebies. So actually tomorrow I'm going to be scouting out some Irish bars in Portland for March's happy hour, since it's St. Patrick's Day month, and so for our return to Fairhaven, which do you know, anyone who knows Voyager should know what Fairhaven is. So I've been doing that for a year. Now I'm trying to get, and I've been telling everyone, it's like, hey, so I post that on Facebook and Meetup. One day, I would like our members to do any other event. I don't care if it's like hey, you want to meet for bowling or dinner at my house, whatever, and I will post that too. So ideally, we'll start having two events, one happy hour and one
call those away other version.
Away mission!
That's right. The offshoot of Vancouver Star Trek Happy Hour. We started last year doing Northwest Star Trek Week, I used to... People would ask what that was, and I said, I would be like, oh, it's a deconstructed con. Instead of like going to one location and you pay one fee and there's all these panels and everything, instead there's like different events at different locations throughout Portland and Vancouver for the whole week. And you pay, instead of one fee for everything, it's a la carte. You pay like whatever you want to, because each event is independently run. Now I just say it's a festival, because that's a lot easier.
Yay! Star Trek Festival.
It's a Star Trek Festival for Portland and Vancouver, and we're making it an annual thing. We just had actually our planning mixer for it last week for 2019, and we announced the dates, which are, Chris, remind me, it's...
Mid-September.
Good job. Yeah,
September 6th through 15th.
Thank you. See?
Okay.
It's like a Stardate week. It's 10 days, actually, not 7 days.
There's some time dilation in there.
Yeah. So it includes Star Trek Day, which is always September 8th, Rose City Comic Con, which is the last 3 days of it.
You did a panel there last year, right?
We did. We did a panel. We had a booth all 3 days. It's independently run event. The members of Vancouver Star Trek Happy Hour, and now the members who are volunteering for Northwest Star Trek Week. We don't run any of the events. We don't manage them or anything. All we're doing is promoting events.
Oh.
So as I tell people, if like, let's say you have a cooking school or you're trying to get your cooking school off the ground, and it's like, well, I'd like to do an event. I would like to do I'm a big vegetarian chef, so how about if I do a Vulcan cooking 101 and I'll do a cooking class that day? It's like, great, let's talk about it. We'll figure out when we can fit you in the schedule, and we'll promote it. We have a website, StarTrekWeek.com. We have Facebook and Twitter. So we're trying to grow it, and it's a labor of love. We don't charge anyone who wants to be part of it.
We're basically the idea people, and we just beg companies to do some sort of nerdy event to create a festival.
Yeah, we had like the Hollywood Theater show, The Wrath of Khan last year, Barnes & Noble.
That was a great
had a science lecture with Dr. Ethan Siegel.
Oh.
With Northwest Star Trek Week, a couple things about that is that, one, not only is it independently run events, but we want to encourage how I ended up falling in love with Star Trek, which was the celebration of being progressive, the celebration of diversity, celebration of science. And so, we had like a bar crawl last year. We're probably going to have one this year. I mean, we want to have fun events. Over time, we do want to start gearing things more and more to having like things that really showcase our diversity here in Portland and Vancouver and the Northwest and science. Because I think that politically, science is getting a lot of short shrift lately.
We're trying to get bigger.
We're trying to get bigger so we can get sponsors, because we would like to have charitable events that we can raise money for progressive causes and science-related causes.
What's going on in your heads? Why are you taking your free time and donating it to this random
Star Trek group?
Well, that's a good question. God, honestly, honestly, it sounded like fun. So the other group I volunteer with is Science on Tap, and it's the crew that helped founded OMSI Science Pub, which is also a good program where, you know, you just, funny enough, again, it's science and alcohol. And so I guess that's just a theme for me.
Cheers! Yay.
Yay. Drink. So, historically, over the last several years, I've just really enjoyed being able to mix my enthusiasm for consumption of ethanol with learning. Synthol, yes.
Excuse me.
Sit corrected. You know, just continuing to learn, continuing my fascination with upcoming technologies and everyone from genetics to astronomy to how PDX keeps planes from hitting birds was a really fascinating one. And so this is really just a continuation of being social, meeting other people who are interested in the same things as myself, and then building the community. And I think at some point when you become attached enough to your community and involved with it enough, at some point you see that you can do some good, give back, and you see opportunity. I showed up to Star Trek Happy Hour because I wanted to drink and talk Star Trek, but as we've talked a year later, when somebody says, hey Chris, we've got a panel at Rose City Comic Con, do you want to talk on it? Yeah. And then, hey, do you want to get tipsy and talk Star Trek on a podcast? I'm not going to say no. And so, you know, when you get big enough and organized enough and you have enough resources, enough people are just like, yeah, you know, I can donate a couple of hours, what do you need? Where it's like, what can you do with this resource? Mm-hmm. Can you run a canned food drive? Can you donate a few hours to something in your community to give back a little bit? Suddenly you see the possibilities. And again, thinking back to Star Trek, and we're talking about being progressive, the good that you can do, you know, what can you do with that? And it's just a natural compulsion to try and do something constructive.
You said it.
Yeah.
What he said.
What am I going to ask?
Could not have said it better. That was perfect. That was really wonderful.
So that was Lou speaking. Chris, do you want to say anything?
What Lou said.
Really, it's just like, it's all having a good time. That's the Star Trek Happy Hour ideas. And that's our idea of it, is you watch Star Trek, you love it, you want to help people and make the world better, you build a community. Community is about educating yourself and growing and helping other people. And so,
would you say it's the best of both worlds?
No.
No, you're not.
Na 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 na.
Do 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 do.
Na 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 na.
You are with me, Godiva Lee, listening to KBO Portland.
Come on, people.
Hi, my name is Tabitha, and I'm here to talk about another video game that I love. And I am joined by my friend...
Bart. I was the one who introduced you to this particular game.
Yes, and the video game we're talking about today is called Journey, not the band. It is a PS3 and PS4 exclusive game.
Yes.
What genre would you put it in? Like,
oh, that's tough. I'm not even sure if I... adventure, probably?
Definitely adventure. Maybe a little puzzle?
3D platformer?
And it is one of my favorite video games. I would definitely put it at one of my top 5 favorite video games. And you were the one that introduced it to me. How did you hear about it?
I heard about it through Flower, which I think you've played as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an experimental game. The company is That Game Company.
So generic.
Yeah. They had previously done another game called Flow and a couple other smaller, I think, indie games that I have not played. Being a big fan of Flower, hearing this, oh, this is kind of a unique game. You've got this game where you play as...
Oh, I love Flower.
As like a petal or the wind, and you go around... through a plant's dream, I suppose.
It sounds like such a... When you also introduced me to Flower, and when you first described it, it's like, that sounds like such a weird game, but it works.
It really works, and it's kind of beautiful in a lot of ways. And being a big fan of that, I was curious what other things either the studio had done or what they were going to do. And, oh, probably a year after Flower came out, I heard about this other game that they were starting to work on.
Sorry to interrupt you, sure. But I think we forgot to mention that the game we're talking about, Journey, it came out in 2012. And so Flower was released probably a few years, like one or
2009, I think. But okay. It's not like we have the internet or anything.
Yeah.
I was curious about what other projects they would be working on. And when it was announced, I was kind of intrigued just based on what they had done before. I just kind of followed as it came along and through the, you know, your standard gaming media sites. And as it got closer, it looked beautiful. It was just kind of a neat looking thing. I heard rave reviews, but I don't want to get too deep into it because it's a short game. It's not particularly long.
Yeah. If you don't know what you're doing, like maybe 2 hours at most.
As it was getting closer, though, I didn't want to spoil it for myself because knowing it was kind of a short game, kind of just wanting to experience it for yourself because it's kind of a personal experience. That's what I had gathered from what people had told me. But that was how I heard about it. That's what I was interested in. That's what I was excited about.
We're really good friends, and I think we have pretty similar tastes in video games, too, because you made me play Flower, and I really enjoyed Flower, and then when you got Journey, it's like, come on over and play Journey. So I did. You didn't tell me anything about Journey. You just sat me down, gave me the controller, booted up the game, and it's like, okay, play.
And I remember that. Yeah, I kind of like, I'm not going to tell you a darn thing about this. You're just going to play it.
And I feel like for a first timer, that is the best way to play Journey, to not know anything about the story, because there's no dialogue. Everything is communicated visually, and the controls of the game do take advantage of the PS3's motion controls.
Yeah, I think the six axis, as it's known as. But you thankfully do not have to use that.
No. You can also use the analog controls. It is such a meditative experience for the game. I would like to first talk about the art direction of the game, because I'm not sure why, but the media that I find the most compelling is if there's really good art direction, and also what the art is trying to say, or what kind of metaphors could be made with the art direction. The game is told, the story for it is told in a very minimalist way. You find out...
Spoilers for a 8-year-old game incoming.
Yeah. The story is told through these wall reliefs that you find. Also, at different chapters in the game, you can communicate with, I guess, another NPC that will sort of reveal things about
in between chapters, yeah. You're kind of visited by a figure that looks similar to you but is differently dressed, who's larger than you.
Also, yeah, a lot taller.
It's done in kind of a relief style.
Mm-hmm. I think because it is told in this really minimalist way, it's really open to a lot of interpretation about what's happening in the game. And you can just sort of interpret the wall reliefs, why your character is in the situation that they find themselves in, on your own. And I will tell you later on what my interpretation of the story is. But talking more about the art, the one thing I love about it is the soundtrack.
Yeah, it has an absolutely stunning,
beautiful soundtrack.
Yeah.
The music was composed by Austin Wintory. And I love this fact. It was actually the very first video game to ever be nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Soundtrack. And I think this makes a lot of Journey fans kind of upset. It lost to Trent Reznor's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo soundtrack. I have to admit, I've never seen that movie or listened to the soundtrack.
Me neither.
And it might be a little bit out of spite. Well, I saw the original Swedish one, and I did really enjoy the Swedish one. I don't want to listen to the soundtrack, and it could be a little bit out of spite. It's like, you beat Journey.
It's a perfect reason never to watch some media, right? To experience some media.
Yeah, exactly.
Spite.
But in a way, I kind of also want to listen to the soundtrack. It's like, how much better are you?
Yeah, and probably this isn't the place for the discussion, but, you know, there's probably definitely some bias
against
the media of video games, especially in the Grammys.
Yeah. Also, about the visual style of the game, it's a very, I would say, simplistic style, because even though we are so impressed by 2019 graphics and the Journey graphics, like compared to other video games of its time, they are a little bit simplistic, but they help tell the story so well. The art style is just perfect for that game.
Yeah, I think in a way that's an intentional choice, because the more simplistic you make a character, the more relatable they are with the player.
And actually, speaking of that, a more simplistic a character design is, the thing that I really like about the traveler, I guess, the protagonist.
We'll call her the traveler. I think that's a good choice. I've always seen the character as more feminine, personally, but at the same time, I think it's not really meant to be gendered at all. I think it is really supposed to be ambiguous or non-gendered, mm-hmm. even.
Yeah, and that's one thing I love about the character design, is that the identity or gender of the character is so ambiguous, because it is in a very simple way, that you can project upon this character whatever you prefer. I guess this is now maybe getting a little bit into, I guess, my interpretation of the game. Maybe not the story, but at least the symbolism. I feel like if you're using like the classic Greek elements, I do kind of like the contrast that these different elements play in the game. Your character first starts out in a desert, so you have fire and earth, and then your character finds themselves in this underground city. And even though you're on the ground, there's this one part where it totally looks like you're underwater. And then the very end of the game, you're flying basically, and you can find these waterfalls. And so I guess I just like the contrast of fire and earth with air and water. I'm not sure if that carries any greater meaning in the game, or if the developers just like the contrast of those four elements to each other.
One thing in those scenes that I really noticed talking about the art is that the use of color is very important in there too.
Oh yeah.
Talking about the simplicity, there's a lot of, I don't want to say pastel, but it's often kind of a more muted color tone. There's a couple major changes from that. There's a couple very bright sequences that happen towards kind of the end of the desert.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times the colors are very muted, but the palette works very well together. But you'll see like an overarching, speaking to the underwater, blue. Blue is the mm-hmm. color of the area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're going through, if you will, fire, which is kind of the end of the desert, it's a very bright, almost orange gold, mm-hmm. like vibrant, glaring orange gold against the sun. And so the color play is very beautiful. It's simple but beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is the story in Journey, and what do you think is going on?
Oh, boy.
I guess this is where we get into spoiler warnings?
Yeah, super spoiler at this point, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. I guess in the end, it's an interpretation sort of thing. Oh, boy. So I was raised Catholic. You can sometimes find yourself coloring things whether or not they are, but to me, one theme that seemed to run through it was kind of a purgatory. Your character starts in the desert alone. You journey through the desert alone. As you continue on your journey, you see this other figure clad in white. They're larger than you. And in between chapters, they kind of show you what has happened, if you will, to their civilization. And as you go further, you're suffering. You're suffering through this world. And at the very last stage, you climb up an icy mountain that's covered in graves. Your character is beaten, battered, their clothes are torn. Something we didn't ever talk about is that the character has a scarf that gets progressively longer as you go through the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of allows them to fly. Video games. Mm-hmm. And at this very end, the scarf is torn to shreds. Your ability to fly is stripped from you. You are just trudging up a mountain. And eventually, as the music fades down, the screen fades to white, your character collapses in the snow, surrounded by gravestones. And then immediately after this, you're visited by this figure clad in white once again, and are suddenly transported into clouds, where all of these beautiful creatures you've seen among your journey are flying, and the music swells, and it's mm-hmm. clouds, and it's, I guess, you know, the European, you know, ideal of like heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And the character finally finishes by walking into a white light and disappearing. And so to me, that looks like a purgatorial suffering.
Mm.
The way I interpret a lot of the reliefs as we go through the game, you see a society that was torn apart by war because of lack of resources. And to me, I liked to interpret it as each of those individuals their souls had to pay this penance. They had to go through this purgatory before they were able to go to heaven, if that makes sense, which is very kind of Catholic. And I'm not saying that's necessarily the only Christian faith that has that idea of purgatory, but often in Catholicism, purgatory is a common theme. So that was one of the things. I was also studying Buddhism in Japan at the time. So I could also potentially see this as a character, because after you walk into the white light, a new light comes out and returns to the beginning of the desert. And I could also see it potentially as like a it's that life, it's that cycle in Buddhism, and it is also the never really escaping the cycle. So that's a little bit of a darker tone too, because in Buddhism, the idea is to escape the cycle. As I've just described the story, I kind of see it maybe going both ways. So if you take the Buddhism approach, it's a little darker because they can't let go. If you take the more Christian approach, maybe they are letting go and they're finding peace. But both of those, I think, are very valid. And I'm sure there's a lot of interpretations. Those are mine. And I like them both. And I'm not really sure which one I like more. Mm. But there's mine. Okay. What about you? How do you really interpret the story?
I think I'll give it a more secular interpretation. So the game is called Journey. And if you look on the soundtrack, the names of the songs are taken from Joseph Campbell's monomyth type. One interpretation is that it's about the hero's journey, because there are songs called The Road of Trials. The last song is called Apotheosis. But I was just noticing on the soundtrack that there are several stages of the hero's journey titles given to songs. And the name is called Journey, and Joseph Campbell's monomyth is explicitly called The Hero's Journey. So I feel like that is definitely an interpretation that could be gained. But I do kind of interpret as the more cynical, maybe Buddhist, maybe a little Hindu interpretation, in which about cycles. And I guess what gives me that idea is that your character, they reach apotheosis, and then they return to the beginning, and then they have to go through their journey again. I guess you could kind of see it as a reincarnation, but the fact that they forgot all this knowledge that they and wisdom that they just learned, and they have to go through all of this again, and they're caught in this eternal cycle of always forgetting their lessons. That's one, albeit cynical, interpretation of the game. But there is also a very hopeful interpretation as well, as that to never give up, and you may have forgotten all this wisdom, but you can always relearn all this stuff. That the most important thing is just to be tenacious and just to keep on going.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways, the fact that you can interpret it in so many different ways mm-hmm. is part of the beauty of the game, is just it's open for that.
Yeah.
How do you want to interpret it? What did it mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
Because it is, the journey is a very personal one in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are potentially embodying this character. You're going through their whatever, their trial.
Mm-hmm.
What do you take from it? Which is why I feel a little bad, you know, it's old. I feel bad, you know, talking about the story. But at the same time, I feel like it's an important thing, if you're interested, to experience yourself and come to your own conclusions on mm-hmm. it. So, don't let the man tell you what to believe.
Yeah, yeah. Which is definitely why, if people choose to play it, even though we've just spoiled the whole thing for everyone, the best way to play it is with as little information as you can. It's definitely one of those games that you don't necessarily play, but you experience.
Yeah, I would agree to that.
Listeners, just Jess here, and I'm joined by collective member David and collective member Keanu. Hello, how are both of you?
Things are great.
Yeah, couldn't be better.
Awesome. So I wanted to start off first with Keanu. Tell us a little bit about how you got into Star Wars.
Well, I would have to say it all started with me back in second grade, I would have to say. I was part of the prequel trilogy. So watching the pod races was just amazing. It blew my mind to watch that. Anakin Skywalker was like my hero before, you know, I started growing up. And then my sister was telling me, oh, yeah, he's a bad guy. And I was like, what? What do you mean he's a bad guy? I watched the original trilogies later on. And, yeah, I just, you know, I just loved it. You know, just knowing the whole story of the original and then watching the second one as it was coming out and then the third one. And I was just wondering, I was like, oh, my God, this is the steps. This is it. This is how he became what he was in the last movie when he became Darth Vader and all that and, you know, fought his son. And I just was blown away by the story just altogether.
So this is a unique perspective. We actually got someone who went in it the other way. I guess with you're talking to some old folks here. We went the traditional route. We saw the originals first. We were too old and jaded to appreciate the 90s trilogies. But you actually saw that before you saw the originals. So that's
Actually too. Another like great person I liked was actually Darth Maul. I was actually him for Halloween one time growing up.
Well, he had a cool like two-sided lightsaber.
Yeah, a dual lightsaber. Yeah, yeah. That was amazing. Yeah.
So I guess with coming at it that way, it's I think of all the terrible movies I grew up with and watching them now, and just how much I thought they were good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying what you, I'm not wanna, but I'm thinking of like the Mario Brothers movie. I watched that in a theater once and it was amazing.
Oh.
And I was very, you know, when it first came out, when did that come out? 80, it was like 1990, 89.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And the movie was panned. It was just considered a terrible, terrible movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I thought it was like, oh man, it's like reverse evolution. This is amazing. Yeah. And it's like, I'll think of those crazy concepts. And then, you know, watching it again, watching the YouTube talk goes on about how, you know, they're worst movies of all time stuff. And, you know, but I'll never think it's that bad. I'll always think, you know, this movie has a special place.
I think the same way with the original Ninja Turtle movies.
Oh, yeah. One.
I was like, these are, yes. I don't care that they've redone all the cartoons now and like made new movies, and it's just like, no, there will never be a topper to those originals.
I even watched the third one over and over again for some reason. I was into it that much. That was what, 93?
Yeah.
And that movie is terrible. That is considered one of the worst superhero movies of all time, just because it was so wrong for everything that Ninja Turtles represented. And I don't know, it's not a good movie. Yet I will always have that place for that one as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting, like you were saying, David, how Keanu comes into it with the prequel trilogies as like his first interaction with Star Wars.
And this is my way of giving Keanu an out for something that I personally don't agree with.
Yeah.
No, that's fine.
I have a hard time with Hayden Christensen as an actor, just in general. So, yeah.
they've been talked about endlessly and very well picked apart.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things, like, now I'm coming back around, especially with the new ones that have come out. And, like, you know, it wasn't that bad. I went after them. I was just disappointed. It was like I turned my back on it and I was done. And now I'm getting more of appreciation. Maybe I'll watch them again. I've only seen the second or third ones once.
Okay.
That's how much I was like, I got to watch this.
Mm-hmm.
And I did.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. I think, too, going forward with the new trilogy, it's like you kind of have to now watch the episode 9.
Yeah, it's tough.
You kind of have to.
Well,
yeah.
they say, like, as much as us fans or whatever will go on about, you know, how dare they are, blah blah blah, we're never gonna do it. We still keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
We're still gonna watch it. I'll just at the very least hate watching.
Yes.
I don't think I'm gonna hate watch it. I've hate watched too many things to, you know, I don't want to. I've wasted a lot of my life doing that with stuff. I don't know why, but I'll still watch it.
Okay. Okay, and so my expectations for episode 9 have significantly dropped since Last Jedi. Significantly. The whole, like, story arc of the hero's journey is now very, very skewed in this trilogy.
and you're not really sure what's going to be happening with Rey and her.
They may as well. They
moving forward.
They could just start over again because they're at that point. Because like it seemed like the last movie was the end of a series. Like, all right.
That's true.
They're done. Now we're going to wash the slate clean again and start over.
Yeah, yeah.
They very well could do it. They could do that. They do whatever they want because that's kind of where they left it.
Yeah. Thoughts on Last Jedi, Keanu?
Honestly, not really. I just watched it. And okay. I was just like, okay, all right, I did it there. And I didn't really want to get into the whole big old, you know, it's all Disney or no, it's Star Wars. No, it's Disney, it's Star Wars, you know. Yeah. I didn't really want to, you know, have that in my head, you know. I just watched it just because it was more to the story and I was just like, okay.
Yeah.
All right, you know, I don't know. It's like I said, it doesn't feel like the original trilogy or the ones that I grew up with, you mm-hmm. know, so. Yeah.
Which are the prequels.
Yeah, the prequels.
Which
yeah.
is just...
Yeah. We will bite our tongue for
yeah,
this.
Yeah, so I'll probably have to say, the best way of thinking it is that it's just for the younger generation, you know. It's for them to grow up just like how I grew up with the prequels. So that's just, you know, my take on it.
Okay.
All right. You know, it's not for me. It's for the new generation. Disney, you know, Disney are always so popular
and
with kids.
It's hard to now to think about that because it's, you know, Lucasfilm is bought by Disney. And so now there's this whole new group of ideals happening with Star Wars. And I think that can also be problematic for a lot of these original fans too, to know like this is not what we grew up watching, but at the same time it's like they need, if they want to have longevity for the franchise, other people need to come in and give input, unfortunately. So it's not, so George Lucas relinquished the rights to Lucasfilm like years ago, right?
Not that long, but I guess 2012.
Yeah. And then so now it's
Disney owns it. But
right,
Disney is pretty, they're pretty great at, they don't necessarily create their own things, they buy what they want, and they're
right.
great at it. So they got Pixar, they bought Marvel, then they went and bought Star Wars, and now they're working on buying Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they fold in new properties, and they're like, we're Disney, you're Disney now.
Yeah.
And it's like, I would like, find something that's good and we'll just take it.
Yeah.
but what you're getting at is kind of, they still do a good job of separating, and Disney has always done this. They've like had studios that they've created that they didn't want the Disney name on it, but even though they're still Disney, like Touchstone Studios, if they have something that's going to be PG-13, they don't want to say Disney.
Mm.
They'll say it's Touchstone Studios or something like that. I don't even know if Touchstone still is around, but that's what they would do. It would still all be owned by them, and they would still have people heading whatever division. So with Marvel, they have their own studio head or whatever who's mm-hmm. running the show there. Kevin Feige, and what everything he's doing with Marvel people. I mean, he's doing a good job, and people are loving it, and it's making bank. And I never really was into Marvel before, but the movies are fun.
Yeah, mm-hmm. same here.
And with Star Wars, actually, Kathleen Kennedy is running that one, and she actually came from before Disney bought it. She was with George Lucas.
Okay.
But she's running the show, and she's pretty much has the power on what's being done. And the Rian Johnson wrote the last movie, and he had ultimate control. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's a... It's weird how they let him have all the power. He wrote the movie, he directed it, he did it, and it turned out the way it is that we, you know,
yeah.
divisive as it is. But that's what they must have wanted.
Yeah, I don't know. And so it's going to be interesting too when episode 9 comes out, because J.J. Abrams is coming back.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, okay, so is everybody going to be like, do I just ignore Last Jedi right now?
Because like, all that happened was within the mystery box. It didn't really happen.
Yeah, exactly. We're all going to be back in Tatooine, and it's all going to be fine. It's like, I don't know.
It's
going to
open with Finn waking up, and everything that happened was a dream in the last movie.
All right.
Yeah. Or it's like, you know, they're going to do something silly, and it's going to be some, like, cross-genre thing that happens, and Captain Kirk's going to, like, pop in or something. I don't know.
Oh, God.
That would be... Well, that'd be fun. It'd be wrong. But you got to realize, Star Trek, the mission of Star Trek is to end wars. Star Trek is meant to end Star Wars.
Yes. Yes, yeah. That is very true. That is very true. I'm definitely going to take it into, like, this is not my Star Wars movie. This is for the newer generation. It is quite all right. I'm just going to be entertained. Like, there was things that you were talking about, David, with some of the earlier, like the original trilogy, how there were some things that you're like, this would never, like, George Lucas would never do this. And he's like, actually, he probably did. Like, he probably wanted it to go this way, you know?
Well, I mean, the prequels are an example. George Lucas had ultimate control of everything that happened there.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, maybe he shouldn't have ultimate control.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, these people,
this balance.
They're vaulted up to whatever mythical genius that they are, when really they're just normal people. And they may have hit gold once, and that rarely happens, you know, again and again. It's just,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I would have to say, at least from those examples, I mean, at least he can, like, listen to what the fans are saying about it. Like, everyone hated Jar Jar Binks. Even I didn't like Jar Jar Binks. And, you know, at least he, you know, and he, from what I was always reading about him, is that he always wanted Jar Jar Binks to be more within the story. But then, you know, just seeing the backlash of the fans not liking him, he was like, okay, yeah, let's just kind of cut that character and put him, like, on a back burner.
Yeah.
True tunnel vision. He did not know what he was getting into or what he was up to.
Yeah. Keanu, you were mentioning it was this new trilogy is kind of for, like, the newer set of fans and everything.
Yeah.
And that goes along the lines with things that are now popular and I think trendy. And David, you were mentioning there was some, like, video game or something that's Star Wars related that kind of was more of, like, a fan thing more than anything that just kind of caught on because of the popularity of Star Wars.
You know how on The Simpsons, Krusty's face is on everything?
Mm-hmm.
It's so... That's Star Wars. The parody, like, I don't think The Simpsons even can go as far as what Star Wars has gone. you just can't get away from it.
And yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm walking down the street, and they're in the Disney... Like, not the Disney. You walk by the Denny's, and there's, like, come get the Han Solo breakfast. Like,
oh, that's right. Like, and the trading cards, like, or whatever.
Oh, right.
Yeah. The video games and stuff, too. Like, you just slap it on, and it becomes popular. Like, with the... I just think about... The creation of the Porgs, I think, was a total marketing thing.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely. They just made
something.
There
was no, like, relevancy to their character, like, within the story at all, just for being, like, they're just little space penguins that are everywhere on this island where Luke is at.
There's something that it has to be some kind of organic quality to these things. You can't force it. Like, what makes someone latch on to, you know, this thing and not another? And the Porg was so ham-fisted and just forced down your throat. And you knew what they were doing. Like, they want us to buy these, you know, stuffed animals with the big eyes. And and some people, you know, they like that stuff. I mean, there's a whole industry of big-eyed creatures that people, you know, lots of plastic going out there. There are things that people just like because it's just natural. And
yeah, there's definitely a fan base, you know, influence, whatever, kind of like this weirdness where you do something in the Star Wars realm and then it becomes super, super popular. And because it's super, super popular, then Star Wars wants to, like, feed into that popularity. So it's like this kind of vicious cycle in a way. With the theme parks now that I'm thinking about, it's like they're going to make millions because it's not only can they go and watch the films, but now they can have this interactive experience of, like, you know, being on the Falcon with Chewie, and you're going through this. It's more than just Star Tours that you would, you know, go to Disneyland and see or whatever, but it's like this, you know, more of an interactive experience. You become a Jedi and blah, blah, blah. And it's quite interesting how it all fans out in that way. But yeah, some of the more ridiculous ones I wanted to mention, the, I don't know what you would call it, the dancing video game interactive thing.
It was the Star Wars Xbox 360, the Kinect Star Wars game.
Okay.
And they had this totally amazing song called "I Am Han Solo." Oh man!
It's like Dance Dance Revolution, but you're actually your character. You're either Lando or Han, or, you know, even Leia, I guess, and you're doing these moves as they're coming up on the screen, and, like, the trash compactor, and I don't know. It was just ridiculous.
But the fact that they're all doing it, and they're all taking themselves seriously, and you're like, wow, this, it's, if you were alone, and no one saw you, would you be doing that?
Yes, or if I was really drunk.
If you were alone and no one saw you.
Yes. It was just really ridiculous. Like, are you serious? There's actual, like, Han Solo would not be dancing like this. Lando, maybe.
He's pretty smooth.
Yeah, he is pretty smooth. But with Han, it's like, I don't know.
He's doing a double blaster, those Twilights. Yeah. They're like,
oh,
it's
Twilight.
Oh, jeez. Let me get my tentacles around that.
Oh, jeez. Well, overall takeaway from Star Wars.
Like I said, I'm just in it for the ride. I'll probably, you know, have my own opinions, you know, later on, just seeing how far they would go. And by far, I mean just, you know, outlandish, like, styles, like the Porygon putting in more weird mascots just to, you know, make things a little cheery and happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really excited for anything like that, you know. But yeah, I would just go, you know, just like Han Solo, you know, just went along with it and, you know, ended up getting caught up in the whole Rebel and Empire business when he didn't really want to at all, you know. So I'm just going to take it like that.
All right.
You know, just go for the ride.
He's a scoundrel.
Fair enough.
In 20 years, Keanu is going to be in here talking to someone who's in his 20s,
right.
And they're going to be having the prequels.
And
he's going, I was a prequel man. How dare you like that?
The hero's journey of Shmi.
Or actually, it'll be the 20-year-old liking the new movies now, hating on the
Wow,
it's,
yeah, I mean, it's, yeah.
We'll see where we are. When we're 80.
Yeah, it's a cycle that will, you know, never end, to be honest. You know. Yeah.
I do wish they would just let us wait for it, because it's every 6 months there's something coming out now. It used to be like we had 3 years to wait for a movie.
Yeah.
We had some time to breathe, you know, and actually go out and do.
Yeah. Now I think that's the problem with the movie industry, though, now. It's like you have to turn content super fast or people lose interest.
It's the Marvel effect, the Harry Potter effect.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. Like, we can't let them stop. Don't stop thinking about Marvel.
Right.
Mm. We got another movie in 6 months.
Right.
3 months.
Or while you're waiting for a movie, a TV show is going to be released.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Milk
yeah.
the cash cow.
Or whatever that creature was on the island.
Yes.
Milk that ridiculously gross creature.
A dinosaur with, yeah.
Thank you both for your input on Star Wars. For more information about Radio Geekly, you can go to kboo.fm/Radio Geekly. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Geekly, and on the Twitter at Radio Geekly. And I am just Jess. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you all soon. Take care.
Yeah. Yeah. So.